Like I said, today we are kicking off a new series. I titled it a word that probably none of you are familiar with. I know Marie asked me, why are you calling it the ecclesia? Why aren't we just using the word that we all call that building whenever we see it? But I didn't want to start with the common. I didn't want to start with what this series is all about. I wanted to use a Greek word that we're not familiar with, because here's the problem. The English word that it represents comes with so much baggage. When people see that building right there, they have all sorts of thoughts about what that means, what goes on inside, what the people are like inside of it. And so I wanted us to go back and say, well, what is this word that we call church based on? And every single place you see the word church in your New Testament Bible, it is using the Greek word ekklesia. And so let's look at what was an ekklesia back in the time of Jesus' day. They didn't have all the baggage that we have tied to the word church. So let's look at that word. Okay, so the word ekklesia, you have ek, which means out of, and klesia is from the Greek word for kaleo, which is to call. So it was literally the called out ones, is what ekklesia is, the called out ones. And by the time of Jesus, it was a word that was used very regularly throughout the Roman Empire, and it was used to talk about an assembly or a gathering. Whenever there was a gathering of people, that's what, in the collective, the group was called the ekklesia. And so, yet, while the Bible translates that word as church, when most people hear church, they're thinking about the little white cute building out on the country roads with the steeple up top. Or maybe when they hear church, they're thinking about the service and the singing and the sermon, or maybe the programs, or maybe the hurt that they've had at some point in their life, or the scandals that they've read about in the news recently and really ongoing for decades now. But here's the thing, when we talk about the ecclesia, the gathering, the church, what we have to understand is that the church is not a building. So often we talk about going to church, where people think they're going to the building. And yes, we call this building the church, but the building does not constitute the ecclesia that God cares about. Often when people think about the church, they think, well, it kind of runs like a business, and you've got finances, and you've got your bylaws, and yes, we have our biannual report I just filled out for the state of Iowa so that they know we still exist, and we have preferred tax status and all that, but the church is not a business. It's not like a formal organization. It's so much broader than that. People don't join a church because they're excited about how the finances are managed. And the church is not simply a service to consume. Yes, we have music and we have singing and musicians, and I'm so grateful for what they do every single Sunday. And we have a message and we have a service, but so often people put themselves in the position of the consumer of the service. So when they go to church, they're going to the building to have church, which is just the service. And they're missing what the ecclesia is. It has nothing to do with where you go or what you do. And the church is not a school. Many people think of, we have Sunday school, and education and training is a big part of what we do. But the purpose of the church goes much broader than simply teaching knowledge transfer. We're in the business of full life transformation. Instead, we have to see the church as the community who gather together regularly to learn and encourage and to love one another. That's what we are. We are the people gathered together inside. I was reminded of this vision of what the ecclesia was this last weekend. While Michelle and I were on vacation, we didn't go anywhere grand. We did a one-day tour to Bloomfield. But on Sunday, my wife said, well, what if we went up to our old church? We had a bunch of errands to run up in West Des Moines, so we decided to surprise that church, and we showed up a little bit earlier than the service started, and we just saw all of our old friends. I was there for 8.5 years. And in seeing all those people and all the smiles and the hugs and the catching up, I was reminded, I didn't go back to that place and go, man, this building sure is nice. I sure do like the lighting that they have in the sanctuary. I didn't think to myself, wow, this service, it's a great service. And it was captivating, it was interesting. But what drew our heart was the people, right? It was the relationship that we'd built in 8.5 years with these people in walking through life, in journeying in our faith towards Jesus together. That's what made the church a church to us. That's what made it special. But so often when we hear the word church, we think about where we go and what we do. But that's not what makes us special here at First Baptist. What makes us special is who we are. Problem is, a lot of people don't understand that. They have misconceptions of what the church is. And so this idea of church has been twisted and dragged through the mud, and its purpose has been totally lost. And the result is church in America and in many parts of the world today is rather bleak. The health of the church is not doing well. And you guys probably know that. You've seen the trends have been going for many years of fewer and fewer people attending church. More and more people feeling like they don't need to go to church. Church attendance in America has been dropping for years. And when we get to COVID, it didn't change the trends, it simply accelerated them. There are over, they say right now, 30% of people who were attending church 3 years ago, COVID, it was like March 15th was the Sunday most churches in America said, okay, we're taking a break and going online. So we're right about the three-year mark. From that moment to this moment, churches across America are about 30% smaller on average. 3 out of 10 people who were in churches 3 years ago aren't attending anymore. But this is a trend line, and I know you can't read the details of it, but it goes from 2008 to 2021. And what we see is that church attendance dropped from 30% to 24% till 2020. But that very last dot on the farthest on the right there, that's way lower, that was 2021. That's a COVID year. And we don't know, is that the drop off a cliff and where it's going, or is it going to bounce back? But what we do know is, we see this with our own eyes, right? We know that there's little country churches in this county who have closed up. There are churches in our community that are hanging on by a thread. There are groups of 12 people who are trying to keep the church going. We understand this church is a little bit smaller than it was in the past. Even so-called evangelicals have completely changed their church attendance patterns. Again, I know you can't read it, but at the top, the green bars on the left are people who attend church less often. And the bars to the right are those who attend church more regularly. And from the top is 2008, and it works its way down to 2021. But here's the bottom line in that 2021 year. 42% of people who claim that they are evangelical Christians also said, I only attend church once a year or less. And so even people who say, I have a personal relationship with Jesus and I know that he died to forgive me of my sins, they, 42%, go to church once a year or less. The church has been devalued. People don't feel like it's important to go anymore. And the reason for people stepping outside of the church structure are all over the map. For some people, the church got too political. For other people, the church wasn't political enough. Some people became just tired of the scandals that kept rocking the church over and over, and they just said, I don't want to be associated with that anymore. Some people personally have been hurt by the church. Things have been said, people treated them certain ways, and they said, you know what, I don't need that in my life anymore. And yet there's still others that before COVID, they were regular church attenders, and it was just part of who they were, but then COVID happened, and everybody went online. And they realized when people started returning to church, I didn't really miss anything. It must not have offered me anything, so I have no reason to return. But no matter what the reason is, here's what's clear and all these trends prove, and that is that something has gone gravely wrong in our churches today. Something has gone wrong that we have this gift, this opportunity to gather as God's people, to worship God, to have communion with God together. And people say, I don't really need that in my life. I can do this on my own from the comfort of my own couch. And so what's happened is we've confused the vision for what the church is all about and the role that it should have as Christians, the role that we should have as Christians within the church. And the result is that a lot of people are more than comfortable with their personal relationship with Jesus Christ, completely apart from a communal relationship with a local body of believers. So as we go through this series, my hope is that I'm able to encourage you why the people of God must see the church as something that's important to their faith. And while I know that many of you, you're here, you're in church, so you likely see the value of regular connection with a church family, but I'm hoping that I can give you some ideas because you all know people who aren't going to church right now. You probably all know people who are like, yeah, I'm a Christian, but I just don't think it's that important to go. And so hopefully I can give you some ideas to have conversation with people, to encourage them, to invite them, to draw them, to want to plug back in to the people of God, the gathered ecclesia of God. And now it might seem manipulative for me to be the one telling you, coming to church is important after all. Like, my livelihood is dependent on people coming to church and putting money in a plate that's back there. If you haven't left your offering, make sure it's back there. That's a joke. We're doing fine. But it's not me who's saying this. It's not just me saying, you know what, we need to get more people in our walls. In fact, this idea of people gathering together as a church wasn't created by a bunch of guys who just thought this is a good idea. It wasn't Jesus' disciples who made up this plan. What we see is the very first place that ecclesia appears in our Bible is in Matthew chapter 16. It only shows up twice in the Gospels, both times Jesus is speaking it. And while this passage where we first see it is filled with lots of debate, it does make one thing clear, that Jesus will build his church. Matthew 16, verse 18 says, Jesus is speaking these words, "And I tell you that you are Peter, and on this rock I will build my church, and the gates of Hades will not overcome it." Ultimately, Jesus here is instituting what we call the Big C Church. Okay, the Big C Church is the universal church of all believers through all time across all the nations of the world. The Big C, capital C Church is ultimately who we are going to be worshiping together alongside in the new heaven and the new earth. When we get to the other side of this world, it's going to be all the people, the church of Jesus. And we understand here we are a small C church. We are a local congregation. And that's what, it's a bunch of local congregations through time that make Jesus' whole church, his universal church. But what we have to understand is Jesus says he is going to build his church. It's his. He's the one responsible to make sure that it goes forward. And he promises that even the gates of Hades will not overcome it. After looking at those statistics I showed you earlier, it's good to see that we know. Jesus says, no, don't worry about what you see in your statistics. My church is going to prevail. There is going to come a day where you all are going to assemble together and worship me. And I look forward to that day. So while Jesus calls for this single gathered church to be constructed in that moment, he's saying, look, disciples, this is what I am building. Throughout the rest of the New Testament, we see these little C churches, these local congregations. We see the church in Jerusalem and the church in Antioch and the church in all the cities that Paul planted on his missionary journeys. In the book of Revelation, in the first three chapters, John writes seven letters to local churches. Each of those little pieces is to the church at Laodicea, to the church at Philadelphia. They're to these local congregations. And that's how the movement of Jesus works, is through local congregations of his whole body. And so the first place that we see the New Testament church getting together is actually in Acts chapter 2, verse 42. It's right after Pentecost has happened. Jesus has gone up to heaven. He has sent his Holy Spirit. Over 5,000 people have come to faith, and they've decided, okay, we need to figure out how we're going to gather and teach people and train people and spread the good news of Jesus. And so they start meeting. And in Acts chapter 2, verse 42, it says, they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship and to the breaking of bread and to prayer. This ecclesia in Jerusalem, when they gathered together, they didn't do this individually. They didn't just say, well, I can pray at home. They came and they met together and they devoted themselves to the apostles' teaching and to fellowship. That's a churchy word for connection with one another. And to the breaking of bread, that's communion, and to prayer. And quite honestly, this is a model that most all churches follow. We follow this model here today. Every week, somebody stands up and teaches you all. We have fellowship events that we schedule. We have donuts and coffee on Sunday. We had the movie night last night. It was an awesome success. We have all these things going on. We have a time of prayer every single week. We have communion every single month. We build that in because that's the model that we see in Acts. Another common way that we look at the purpose of the church is with these five purposes up on the screen. A lot of churches view it this way, and it makes a lot of sense. You've got worship and fellowship and discipleship, ministry and mission. So worship is connecting with God. We do it every Sunday when we gather here together. Some people might worship together in small groups or just two people get together and worship God and pray. But it's connection with God is worship. That's what the church is called to bring people together to do, to help us connect with God. And we connect with one another through fellowship, doing these things that we build relationships with each other so that we can live out the one another passages of the Bible. We have discipleship, which is learning how Jesus wants us to live, not just the head knowledge, though that's important, but also accountability and challenging each other, iron sharpening iron, that we would become more like Jesus. Ministry is serving others within and outside the church community. It's doing the things that Jesus would have us do, being his hands and his feet in our world. And missions is telling people who don't already know about Jesus, about his peace and his love. And what's interesting to me is that there are so many Christians and people who would say they're evangelicals who would look at these five purposes and say, Ryan, but I can do all of these on my own. I don't actually have to go to a church to do this. I just hit my Spotify playlist and I listen to the best singers on my stereo system at home and I worship at home. And I hang out with friends. We have fellowship. I have Christian people and we go grab dinner on Friday nights. Discipleship, I got David Jeremiah on the radio or I can tune in to any TV station. 19.1, I think, is nonstop Bible teachers on my television. I can watch that or I can go pull up any internet Bible lesson I want to. I don't have to go to the church. Quite honestly, Ryan, some of these teachers, they're a lot better than you are. And I'd say, yeah, I agree. You can serve at the food pantry. You don't have to be a part of the church. You can tell people about Jesus. You don't have to be a part of the church. Ryan, I can do all these things. Why is it important for me to be a part of the gathered body? And so what they are missing, however, I think, is that their participation in the local ecclesia is about a lot more than just meeting their needs or fulfilling their checklist of to-dos. Let's take a look at the primary verse that challenges this thinking of, Ryan, I don't need to be a part of a church, of a gathering, and I can still have a personal relationship with Jesus. And that's found in Hebrews chapter 10. In Hebrews chapter 10, verses 24 and 25, we read, and let us consider how we may spur one another on toward love and good deeds. You can't do that alone. You have to do that in community. Not giving up meeting together, as some are in the habit of doing. See, this is not a new problem. We're not the first people to have people say, I don't think I actually need to go to the gathering and I can still have this relationship. This was happening way back in the very, very early stages of the church. But encouraging one another, And all the more as you see the day approaching. It's a good message for today with the world all around that we see, isn't it? That we encourage one another. Look, we need to go through these trying times of life together. We are better together. We're stronger together. We need to go through life and the ups and downs and the trials together. We need to invite people in to see that this is important, that we walk this faith journey as a community gathered. I think it's pretty clear in Hebrews, they're saying, look, don't give up meeting together, because if you do, you're going to miss out on a bunch of important things you can't do on your own. You need people to run this race alongside you. When you think about, have any of you been joggers before? Like, any of you? No? Okay, so I ran cross country. And in the summer in high school, if I was running by myself, I could run at this pace. I could do that for an hour, no problem. But if my best friend was with me, I ran at this pace because we were going to push each other. That's what running partners do. So often, if you train with somebody else, you push yourself a lot further, a lot faster, because there's somebody there to encourage you in what you're doing, to spur you on. That's, I think, a big part of why Jesus wants us to gather as an ecclesia, as a gathering, as an assembly, because it makes us better. It spurs us on, and we can't do that all alone. So in light of these verses, I think those who have stopped going to church need to think more deeply about why maybe they should go to church or why they don't think they need to participate. But here's the first reason I think every Christian needs to be in church. It's for our benefit. Like I've discussed, having other people to spur you on, to encourage you, to pray with you, for you to share the junk of your week with them when you're feeling like life is overwhelming, that's for your benefit. Gathering together and singing worship together and feeling the peace and the power and the presence of Jesus in the room, that's for our benefit. To have people encourage us in the hope that, you know what, even when your faith starts to feel like, Jesus, is this real? Does this even matter? To say, yes, it does. Hold on, because one day you're going to experience the goodness of God in its fullness. That's for your benefit. When people tell me about the victories that they've seen Jesus doing, it builds my faith. And I can't do that if I don't gather with others. But that's kind of a selfish reason. Here's another way to look at it. You going and being a part of the gathering is for others' benefits. Some other people need you. They need you to be a listening ear in the church foyer when they just say, you know what, I'm having this struggle with my granddaughter and I'm really worried for her. Will you pray with me about her? And you say, yeah, I will pray for your granddaughter this week. You could come to church today and you could say, Ryan, that worship, I just wasn't feeling it. Your message doesn't apply to me. I'm already in church every week. But you should still come, because your being here isn't necessarily just for you and what you gain, but it's what you can offer to others. Being a listening ear, helping set up the coffee table, helping teach Sunday school, however it is you minister or connect with people, it makes a difference in other people's relationship with Jesus. If half of you said, I can do church all by myself, and this group got half the size, we would feel a gaping hole here. It wouldn't be the same. We need all of us. And finally, this is for Jesus' benefit. Ultimately, the church isn't for me or for you, but it's for Jesus, the one whose church it is. He said he was going to build a gathered people. And that can't happen if you're not gathering with anybody else. Nowhere in the Bible does it tell us that we can solely have a personal relationship with Jesus. Instead, we see pictures of communion when Jesus says, whenever you gather, do this in remembrance of me. Or when he says, when two or more are gathered, I am in your midst. He's always talking about doing faith together as a community. And so we have to understand that gathering together is what Jesus desires for each and every one of us. So after looking at everything so far, here's the paradigm shift that I think those of us inside the church and currently outside of churches need to make today. Okay, these are three things, paradigm shifts we have to make. We gather as the church and we don't go to church. When we understand that we gather as a people and it's not about going to a building. As long as your mentality is that the church is the structure and the place you go to or the service you attend, you misunderstand your role as a part of the church. You are the church. We are together the church. We have to remember that the church is the people. It's the who. And so in future weeks, we're going to look at different reasons why it's so important for us to have this paradigm that we are the church. We don't go to church or watch the church. We are part of the church. The second paradigm shift is we participate in the church. We don't watch. We need to participate and not just watch. And this has become a problem, this consumeristic mentality. Quite honestly, it was created by the church. We did this to ourselves. The seeker-sensitive movement, which said, hey, let's make it all comfortable. Let's have music that people really like to sing, maybe play some cool contemporary songs and throw some Jesus music on it, make sure that we have Starbucks, have Krispy Kreme deliver in the foyer, have the kids' ministry just like Disneyland, like all the games, characters, and costumes. We created a consumeristic mentality in the church. And what it did is it made more people come, but they came and they grabbed their coffee and they sat and they watched. And they didn't participate. And they see church as something that they go to and just watch. And they say, well, that was good or that was bad or I liked that or it's not as interesting anymore. You know, we got a new pastor and he's just not as captivating. I think I need to find a new church. And the reason a person can say that easily is if they never became a participant. You can't be a spectator. You need to be a participant. You need to actually get involved. That's how New Testament churches were set up. People actually did the ministry. Some people prayed, and some people read scripture, and some people taught children, and some people managed the tables. And so together, they gathered, and they carried the load of the church together. And we do that. Many of you wear many, many hats and minister in a lot of different ways. And some of you don't aren't in ministry in various ways. And we would love to help you get plugged in. We need more people carrying the load. Many hands make for light work for the rest of us. And I understand, though, for some of you, maybe those of you watching online right now, you're thinking, Ryan, but I can't participate. I can't actually get to church. For various reasons, maybe you're those snowbirds and you're someplace warm right now. Maybe you're a shut-in, you're dealing with health issues, and you don't feel like you're able to actually come to the gathering. Well, in those situations, it's up to us and to you to figure out how can we still be participating in church together. That's why as a church, we mail all of our shut-ins, get the bulletin and the prayer guide mailed to them every single week. It's our way of trying to keep them feeling included. And I know that many of those who aren't able to come weekly pray over that prayer guide regularly. They're great prayer warriors. Many of them participate like clockwork. I get checks from several of them the first day of the month. It like shows up in the mail because they want, that's their way of participating and still being a part of this family and this gathering. And so I understand sometimes being here physically isn't possible, but if you're able to, it's important. And finally, the third paradigm shift is that we are blessed when we join in to what's going on in the church. We're not obligated. I think the reason so many people have walked away from the church and not felt anything is because they were raised seeing church as an obligation, and they never experienced it as a blessing. They're like, I go to church because I'm supposed to go to church. I go to church because that's how I'm going to get to heaven. I go to church because that's what makes my mom or my grandma happy. And when finally the obligation or the guilt wasn't enough, they finally said, I'm just not going to go. And the problem there is apparently we as the church have not made it the feeling of blessing that it should have been to them. When I miss going to church, I feel like I have missed out on something. But for those who have stepped away, they don't feel like they've missed out on something. And that's kind of on us, that we've made it too dry or too unfriendly or too unloving, that they didn't feel connected to the people. They didn't feel like there was anything for them. They didn't feel like they were offering anything to anybody else. And so what difference does it make if they step out? And that's kind of on us. We need to help them understand that honestly coming to church is a blessing. Maybe you feel that way. Maybe you understand as I say it, you're like, yeah, I feel like I miss out when I'm not there, when I don't gather and see friendly faces and give hugs and encourage people and ask them how they're doing in life, when I don't pray together, when we don't worship together, I feel like I'm missing something. Here's the bottom line. Jesus needs all of his followers to be participating in a local church for their benefit and for others. So if you're watching this message online, but maybe you stopped attending church, maybe somebody sent you to this message and said, you need to go watch this message. We need you back because you have a role to play, and we need you here to fill that role. We are better with all of God's people who God intends to be a part of this body serving in their various functions, and we're going to talk about that more in future weeks. Maybe you'll show up to that. For others of you in this room, maybe you've been coming week after week, but that second bullet, you know, that we need to be participants and not just spectators, not just watching, that kind of strikes a bit of where you're at. As the body of believers, we all have a role to play. And so maybe you need to find a way to get more connected. You need to plug into a Sunday school class, or we have small groups. We have lots of ways that you can minister with people. I've found joining ways to volunteer and get involved that way is a great way to build connection, to build relationship, to grow in your faith. For some of you, you need to just say, you know what, Ryan, you're right. I want to get more plugged in. And if that's you, come talk to me after the service this week. Shoot me an email. I want to help you get more plugged in this church. And finally, for many of you, you are fully engaged in everything that's going on in this church. And I'm so glad for that, that there are many of you who are doing that. And you're reaping the benefits. And if that's you, I hope that you're gaining some insight in how you can encourage other people to come and experience it fresh and new for themselves. We don't want to be people who are guilting others to come back to church. Oh, you need to come back to church. You know, it's not good for you to not be going to church. If we're guilting people, we're not actually inviting them. We're pushing them further away. People need to be invited. They need to hear why church is good for them. They need to hear that church is making a difference in your life. Because if it's making a difference in your life, if it's a benefit to you, then that's going to draw them. And they're going to say, you know, I'm missing that. I want that for myself. Maybe I'll give it a try. But it has to be an invitation to draw them to what Jesus is doing through his gathered people. Look, I love all of you at First Baptist here in Sheridan. I missed you guys last week. I understand that this church is not about this building. While the building's cool and I love the ceiling in here, I could do without the carpet. But I love this congregation that God has brought together. I love seeing your faithfulness. I love hearing your stories. I love hearing about the things you've gone through together through the years. I love the support that you offer me and my wife and your encouraging words that we hear so often. I love sometimes the conversations I get in. I don't always love them in the moment, where there's challenge and there's a little bit of iron sharpening iron and it forces me to think differently about things. That's good for me. It's good for you. It's good for us as a church that we do that together. I love that it was a week or two ago I watched a youth on the floor playing with one of the little kids in the foyer. And so I'm seeing people from different generations connecting. I love when I see the older folks asking the teenagers about how life is going. I love your generosity and the way you connect. And that when I talk about the big plans for how we're going to reach our community, you guys get excited about it and you get behind it. Like, this church is not about the building on 205 South Grand Street. This church is about a lot more than just our service that we have in here at 10:15 on Sundays. This church is all of us gathered together trying to make a difference for Jesus and walking our own faith journey together. We do this together, and we do it a lot better together than we do it apart. When you get distant, when you go a month without coming to church, it's easy to start having doubts play in your mind. Like, is that really important? Do I really need to read the Bible? Do I actually trust God cares about this situation that I've been praying about for months? But when we gather together, we spur one another on to good works. We encourage each other. We are better together. And so I'm excited to spend as many years as God gives all of us together to walk this journey of faith together. You make me better, and I make you better. And that's why Jesus wants us to do this journey together, to be his ecclesia, his gathered people. Would you bow your heads with me as we pray?